Hey, everybody, it's Jason here. This Sunday, August 16th, we'll be in Detroit for Magnum PI Day at the Detroit Tigers. If you are in the general Detroit-ish area and would like to meet us, two things you can do. One, we're going to try to meet listeners post-game. We don't know what we're doing, but we're going to try to go to Union Assembly, which looks like a nice bar that's kind of near the ballpark, like a block away. Also, if you're coming to see us sometime that evening, whether you go to the game or not, you could always just email us, magnum@theincomparable.com, and maybe we can let you know where we are. It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, and I'm joined as always by these two yo-yos, Philip Michaels and David J. Lohr. Hi, guys.
Mr. White Death, please take a breath. You had to hide away for so long, so long.
Hey, how's about some sushi? Who wants to get sushi with Borgnine?
Friends, we are doing a very special episode of Magnum PI on this episode of the Magnum Podcast. Or should I say Mag Pod?
The Mag.
And we're going to, that'll be a segment shortly. But first, I'd like to do something unprecedented and introduce a segment called Early Letter.
Early
Letter.
I'd like
to read a letter right up top from listener Matthew, who writes,
I don't see anything in the rules that doesn't allow this.
Yeah, there are no rules. It's cool. Matthew writes, you guys are coming to Detroit. I work for the city and live in the area. And while I won't be at the game, a meetup would be awesome. I don't know. After the game is over, maybe we'll go somewhere and people can come see us. I don't know. While here, make
if
sure you
have
guys...
restaurant recommendations, let us know, folks.
Oh, yeah, sure. Magnum@theincomparable.com.
Anything that looks like the King Kamehameha Club, we're there.
Yeah, so if you interested in seeing us in Detroit after the baseball game, which is going to be July the 16th.
August.
Sorry, August.
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 August is
if it's in
May
July, 8th. We're in a time machine because it's August.
Well, it'll be next year. No, August the 16th in the evening in Detroit, Michigan, near the ballpark. Near the ballpark. Send us an email, magnum@theincomparable.com, and we'll maybe hip you to where we're going to go after the game is over. Matthew.
Meet you on the Gordie Howe Bridge in Windsor.
Matthew recommends visiting the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn, where my friend Stephen Hackett's got his IMAX are in that collection. And he says, while I've got you here, I want to make an episode suggestion. Season 3, episode 8, arguable, Mr. White Death. A mid-60s Ernest Borgnine is passed off as a big-time wrestler who has a secret. It's a fun episode that starts with a mob murder and ends on a heartwarming father-son moment. Love the show. Happy to hear how you're going to get to the whole series. Thank you. It's from listener Matthew. And we indeed did season 3, episode 9, as listed in the Magnum podcast official Bible, magnum-mania.com, because they listed You See the Sunrise as 2 episodes, as does the Apple streaming platform. So we're going to call it episode 9, Mr. White Death. It is Ernest Borgnine. This episode insists he's in his mid-50s. Friends, it's not just a guy in his mid-60s. It's Ernest Borgnine in his mid-60s. But, you know, for him to have a son the age of the character in this, they got to claim that he's younger. He plays real young as an actor, doesn't he?
He does.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
the youth of the man.
He has the mind of a child.
Yep. When they said that, I had to look up to see, all right, how old was Ernest Borgnine when they filmed this? Because we are in our mid-50s, and I went, I do not look like that. I'm sorry.
No, we were all offended that they would suggest that we all look like Ernest Borgnine, and I can tell you we do not.
Not even by the people aged differently in those days standards.
No, not even close.
You know, and I just want to address this right away, because I know that listeners are probably wondering. Disappointing lack of Torva in this episode. No Torva.
Yeah. Yeah.
A Torva free zone.
We begin in Miami in 1955, where we hear Italian accordion music at a beach resort, and then we see a scene.
Jason, I just want to say it is not just any Italian accordion music. I believe that is the song Cara Mia.
Okay.
It is.
Yes. Well, and I will tell you, there is a wrestling connection to the song Cara Mia. In the 1980s, the WWF, then the WWF, now the WWE. This was before those namby-pamby wildlife people.
Panda lovers, yeah.
Yeah. They put out a rock album to capitalize on the rock and wrestling connection. And on the wrestling album was Russian bad guy Nikolai Volkov, actually a guy from like Serbia, singing Cara Mia.
Mm.
And then getting angry when people didn't like it, because that was his whole shtick. He would come out and say, stand for the national Russian anthem. And then they'd boo him and he'd go, you Americans have no class.
Yeah, you know, at one point you told me that if you were ever to have walk-up music as a baseball player, you would choose the Soviet national anthem.
Not anymore. I want to point out I said that before the Ukraine invasion.
No, well, I mean, Soviet Union no longer exists, and although they still use that anthem. I will just say, Phil, I've known you a very long time. You've said many funny things over the years. That may be my favorite joke you've ever told me. Is because you paused for a moment, and then you just said Soviet national anthem, and I was like, what? And then you explained Nikolai Volkov and all of that. But I just,
and
was
also,
one of the,
at the time, you never really heard it anymore.
No,
so I would
no,
be unique.
No, it would have been, it was completely kind of just the most out of left field answer, and yet it seemed perfect in that you had very given it a lot of thought.
Anyhow, the wrestling album, yeah. Cara Mia, sung by Nikolai
Volkov.
Well,
and friends,
and now I have to think about what my walk-up music would be.
You okay?
This may take a while.
That's okay. You can tell us in Detroit.
Yeah.
And
I got to think.
And
Detroit Rock City.
I will say, if you're wondering if Phil is going to be regaling us with wrestling things for the rest of this episode, you don't wonder no longer. He will.
We were idly wagering before the recording.
Italian music at a beach resort. It's Miami, 1955. I say again, it's Cara Mia or whatever. I don't care.
Yeah, no.
It's important that it's accordion-y because it will come back. We're at the barber looking out, and a guy is gonna get shaved. He's got a hot towel on him that the guy keeps trying to put over his entire head. That seems suspicious. But I want to point out that I want to congratulate the production team of Magnum PI. They found three old cars to put outside. Because the angle, from the angle, you can see three old cars out there, and I believe two people dressed in period attire walk by on the sidewalk. Well done. Good job.
It was a rare win for the Magnum PI continuity editor.
And a guy comes in, maybe he's a mobster, and he says, How you doing? So I guess this is old Jimmy Two Times. and then he does some small talk as he sits down in the barber's chair. Did you see the fight? Well, you didn't miss much. You didn't miss a thing. At which point I thought, why did you say, did you see the fight, if there wasn't anything there? This is the worst small talk ever. Anyway, I went down to Havana.
Oh.
They get the towel on his head, and then the barber's like, I gotta go in the back. I'll be right back. And I'm like,
I gotta go get the special tonic.
Oh no. And he goes away, and then another gentleman comes out, wearing Sansibelt slacks, but we don't see his face. And he smothers him and grabs him by the neck, and he's like, this shaves on Dominic. And he's got a ring and the voice of Ernest Borgnine.
Yeah. So,
well, I was going to say, you can't show his face because if Ernest Borgnine does not look like he's in his mid-50s, he definitely doesn't look like he's in his 20s.
Oh, certainly not. Certainly.
No, the de-aging technology would have bankrupted Universal Studios to make Ernest Borgnine look young.
Yeah, that was not possible. It may not,
I just want to say it was this guy's bad decision to go get his face shaved on the day Michael Corleone was settling all family business.
No kidding.
Yeah. It was a terrible idea.
Anyway,
But the baptism was great.
As the As the life is squeezed out of him, we smash cut to a similar move in a wrestling ring in Hawaii. It turns out, because Rick is there with TC and Thomas Magnum, and they're like, "Hey, I thought you said we were taking you to a steak dinner." He said, "Well, that's after the show." And they're like, "The show? What?" And then these guys are wrestling, and it's a guy in a costume and another guy in a Lucha Libre mask. And Phil, I throw it to you for our first segment about wrestling, which is, do you have any thoughts about this fine, sub sub-amateur wrestling
matchup
here.
Yeah, no, this is like the style of wrestling that you would see midday on ESPN in the 1980s when ESPN did not have enough contracts with legitimate sports leagues, so they'd show things like AWA wrestling. And yeah, basically you have a big Hawaiian guy with a big masked guy, and they're just not really doing very compelling maneuvers to an audience of about 20 drunken people. I don't know. My thought while watching this is this the same set that they used for the Underground Fight Club for TC becoming a boxer?
That's exactly what I wrote down.
It has that kind of vibe. I didn't care enough, just like Jason doesn't care about Karamia, mm-hmm. I didn't care enough to go watch A Sense of Debt again. To confirm that, in fact, that they just double-dipped on sets. Once you paid for the wrestling ring once, you have to keep using it.
Yeah, so anyway, the wrestling is going on, but it turns out what it is, Rick is actually... and this is season three. Rick is basically bugging the manager because he owes him $5,000. So Rick is doing his own little mob style interaction here as we watch the fight between. And as the referee says their names, I wrote down it's Big Zongo
and
Mr. White Death. So I've decided, David, you're Big Zongo. And Phil, you're Mr. White Death.
I agree.
And I'll be the referee, and when the episode is over, I will shout, "Time has run out! It's a draw!" Because that's what the referee does. And then you two guys will throw me out of the ring, because that's what they do.
And angrily keep on fighting.
Yes.
As far as
we do that.
Big Zonga and Mr. White Death, they really did not sit around pulling an all-nighter on those, did they?
No, they're not trying real hard.
So there was a wrestler named Dr. Death at about that time. So hopefully his legal team got in touch with Belisario Industries and came to an agreement.
Maybe.
I do like the fact that Rick is trying to muscle the guy. Like he's pointing to he clearly invited Thomas and TC there so he could point to them and go, "Look, I brought help.
I brought muscle," which gets of course backfires. On them.
Well, and this guy is lucky because he's got Selleck and Mosley's stunt doubles as his guys, which makes it really hard to film to fight, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why Selleck gets his ass kicked, because he's being beaten up by he's fighting himself. It's man versus self. It's
so the way this goes is that he says,
apparently he does have a finger injury from the previous episode that seems to have been a real thing that Selleck had.
So he says, "You're on the turf," the dude says. "I brought my friends. You shouldn't have done that, brah," says the manager. And then there's in a back hallway, there's a punchy until it is broken up by Ernest Borgnine himself, Mr. White Death, who stops this fight and takes Magnum out for sushi.
Imagine how bad you have to be at fighting, as we learn that Rick is throughout this episode. Mm-hmm. Imagine how bad you have to be that Ernest Borgnine is your knight in white shining armor, in white death shining armor, as it were.
Yeah, it's true.
Hey, how can we repay you? Hey, let's we could go to dinner.
Get me some sushi.
And Ernest Borgnine is really into sushi.
I did keep track, and I did double check it with magnum-mania.com, the official Bible of MagPod. Rick gets hit in the face 4 times in this episode.
He does.
And that alone is quite pleasing.
And gets progressively worse as the episode goes
on. Yes, and each time leaving more damage. It's like by the end, it's like he's taken like the anti-aging medicine, but then stopped taking it all of a sudden, and he's rapidly aging before us.
And it's the kind of running joke you would expect from a writer who had never written the show before, but this is Ruben Leder, who's on the staff.
I do think we have established throughout the series that Rick is a terrible fighter.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think so.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So this is really just taking it to its logical extreme that he is clearly out of his depth throughout this episode, including when he has to square off against Ernest Borgnine, which we'll see later.
So they do go out to sushi. Rick and TC leave. They go to a sushi place, and Ernest Borgnine does a bit of business where he's like, oh, a little more. Just put a little more on there. And then they go and they sit at a table, real natural, like sitting next to each other facing out.
Yes.
Which, you know, allows them to frame the shot really well.
As everyone does at this sushi restaurant.
Well, this very weird sushi restaurant.
Yeah. It's keep the aisle clear, please, yeah, date for our sushi. Wait staff.
Yeah, I like that everybody else is doing it, too, because that's the show's way of saying, no, everybody sits this way at a sushi place.
It's,
what are you talking
totally
about?
It's totally normal.
This is how they do
it. It's the manners.
So
it's the mysterious food of the Far East.
He is Earl. He tells a story about how he was wrestling one time with a sumo wrestler, but then the guy had a heart attack and died during the wrestling. And he quotes a line of Japanese that he says is kill the jerk. Everybody else in the sushi restaurant who must speak Japanese looks at him, or maybe not. Maybe they just are like, why is Ernest Borgnine here shouting in Japanese? And then
what the scene conveys is that he's a bit of a lout.
Yes. Yeah. And he asks finally the key question, what's your dodge, Mag? Which I just want to point out, this is the second episode we've watched recently where Magnum is referred to repeatedly as Mag. And I think Phil, at the time you pointed out a strict policy, which if I could summarize, it would be no.
Yeah. Yes.
But here we are with Mag, more Magpod.
We're running into a lot of episodes lately where people are saddling Magnum with terrible names between Mag and Tommy and all that. I don't like it. He says, I don't like it at all.
I'm looking for my boy. Maybe you can help me. You're a gumshoe. You're a private eye. Private investigator. I'm looking for my boy. His name's Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a picture of him wearing a Daniel Boone cap. He's like, well, how old is he? He says, well, he's 36. I left him and his mom high and dry back in the 50s, but he's been here since 61. My wife remarried and died, but I'd like to see my boy one more time. You can do it, Mag, he says. So, cut to the estate.
Well, first we have to get that stop at hotel.
At the hotel. So Magnum tells a story about adopting a Saint Bernard that was and it cost his family to take it to the vet, and then it chewed through the furniture and it dug a hole in the backyard and then it escaped. We're implied that there's going to be a lot of trouble here with Earl. Mr. White Death owes the lady at the flop house 6 days for his room, but the good news is she took all of his possessions out of his room, including the money out of his sock, and now here's your suitcase, get out. And he's like, but I could, come on, I got money coming in. She's like, nope. And he's like, where am I gonna stay? At which point Magnum looks directly at the camera, because we know
Hall of Fame take to the camera at that scene.
So Magnum is wandering around the estate because Earl's snoring woke him up. The lads bark. Earl is skipping rope on the dirt, but Higgins appears to say these are bulbs from Holland. Now, it's just dirt. I think you would be able to tell the difference between dirt and actual like planting of special tulips. But
also, why wouldn't you rope it off to event indeed to prevent?
Exactly.
And this is the beginning of what I would say about this episode that I noticed, which is it is extremely broad and unrealistic. And if you were saying to yourself, well, I didn't expect realism out of Ernest Borgnine, I'm like, yeah, you might have like tried to inject some realism elsewhere to counteract the Ernest Borgnine of it all. This episode just leans all the way into the fact that all of this is going to be broad and ludicrous right
and
from
forced,
the bulbs.
Very forced.
Very forced.
I would even go so far as to say by the time the episode ended and I tried to piece together everything that happened, I would say borderline incoherent.
There's so little here that there's nothing to be done.
Yeah.
Look, I think watching Ernest Borgnine is fun.
Sure.
And I think
it
his interactions
be, yeah.
that we're going to say here with Higgins are kind of fun. I think there's fun stuff in this episode. Yeah. As an episode, it does not hold together.
No. So I am, having watched it and watched it very recently, I am still unclear as to the ins and outs of
we'll decode it. David will be here to decode all the secrets.
God.
So it turns out that
I knew. Well, so before we jump away, I'd like to introduce a segment.
Okay.
Because we have talked about backdoor pilots before.
Yes.
And in this cycle of episodes, in fact, we have already done one backdoor pilot for what essentially became Airwolf.
Yes.
I would argue this is a sideways pilot for Airwolf as well, because this is basically the exact character Ernest Borgnine plays on Airwolf.
Oh, interesting.
Which, you know, he's a jovial guy who might be dangerous, but he's mostly jovial. Right?
I'm going to say that really there are two Ernest Borgnine characters. There's jovial lout and violent lout.
Yep.
Yes.
And sometimes that Venn diagram is a perfect circle.
Yeah.
And that segment, David, we're going to call Ernest Borgnine's Tales of Tales from Airwolf.
Well, I was going to call it Opening the Back Door.
Nope.
Because, you know, with all the backdoor pilots they threw on this show,
Ernest
all of these
Borgnine's Tales of adorable, Tales from Airwolf.
From opening the back door.
Sorry.
Backdoor so to what? Borgnine. Nope.
Not going to do it.
Nope. She's busy on QVC.
So.
But my question is, which of all these backdoor pilots and backdoor characters would you have wanted to see a series of?
Well, I think J. Digger Doyle is high in that.
That was mine, because, I mean, Aaron Gray was the only reason I watched Buck Rogers and why I hated the second season.
I'm a big fan of the Annie Potts character, although I don't know if that was a true backdoor pilot or just let's put on someone quirky.
Yeah.
You know the circus episode? Or was it the rodeo episode? Whatever. I want to just follow them around.
Or the carnival?
Yeah,
I just
want to follow the carnival people around.
I always wanted to see France.
Yep,
that guy.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do that.
Okay.
All right.
So Higgins and Ernest Borgnine have people in common because he sees the crest on Higgins's coat, and it turns out he knows a guy Higgins knows, and he's like, I always wondered what became of Corky, who's like the one-legged limey, according to Ernest Borgnine. Higgins tells the story.
Just inject some wrestling. That's a terrible gimmick.
Yeah.
One-legged limey.
Yeah. He takes off his peg leg and hits him over the head. Higgins tells the story like he does.
You'd make him a pirate!
Well, these guys aren't that good. And Ernest Borgnine says, oh, I know who you are now. You're Punky, at which point Magnum gives his big, loud, high-pitched laugh, and they go off,
unquote,
and leave Magnum standing there. So Higgins is going to bond with Ernest Borgnine a little bit. A twist I didn't see coming. This actually goes against type and is fun. Now Magnum says, "Get ready, everybody. Get ready. Stay awake. One of the things about modern life is that everything is on a computer for anybody to see. Welcome to the internet, Mag." This scene. So, guys, I'm going to ask you the question. Did somebody write the script and then realize they were like 8 minutes short and came up with this entire segment of the show? Because nothing happens, and it's not funny, and it's not interesting. And this is literally a series of scenes that could have been one call to Ice Pick off camera by Rick. And instead, they're like, no, we're going to do this really funny business where Magnum muses about everything being on a computer while waiting in line for facts at the records department, and then feeding the parking meter, and then talking to Ms. Jones, who keeps getting a call from her boyfriend / ex-boyfriend, Ray, and then asking people to wait in line. And it's terrible.
It goes on forever.
I do have a theory about this, though.
Okay.
I'll see if your theory matches mine, so go ahead.
So, okay, we're in the third season now. The show's a hit. People have started to notice, you know, maybe a Ferrari is not the best surveillance vehicle for a private eye. Maybe he doesn't have, you know, he's always shooting guns. Maybe this isn't what a private eye does. And so I think they wanted to do a bit where it shows, yeah, this is kind of the boring part of being a private eye. I wouldn't say they did it well, but they're just sort of, they're hanging a lantern on it. It's like, yeah, he can do this too. You just would rather see him jumping off mountains and shooting things and driving the fast car. So I think there's something to it. And I appreciate that Miss Jones shows up and they tried to have that continuity. Although it's weird because Ray is clearly her boyfriend here.
Yeah.
But her name is still Miss Jones when she's married to him, and in the cast list he's listed as Ray Jones. So it's like, did she just find a guy with the same name?
Yes.
Weird.
Yes.
Well, their relationship is off on again, off again, married again, kind of.
Yeah. Could be.
My theory.
So she appears in two later episodes, none of which we've seen. So we've only broken the seal on Ms. Jones now.
Well, we did do the Ms. Jones episode.
We did Ms. Jones.
That has the crazy strip bar.
Yeah.
Oh, we did. That was episode 67. You're right. Okay.
With the guy with the roller skates.
You're right.
And I remember very few details, but I do remember that strip bar.
Ms. Jones.
And what cracks me up is she finally gets an episode focused on her and never appears again.
Never appears again. Well, they got it out of their system, clearly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So my theory.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
My theory. This was going to be a wrestling heavy episode. They got one half of the Samoan connection to appear as Big Zongo. They have Lord Tally-ho there as the referee. They were going to do lots of wrestling scenes. And I think Ernest Borgnine got to the set and was, oh God, he's not up to it.
Yeah.
So
could be,
or we can't find a, or maybe stuntmen were injured because that could have been a thing. And they wrote this as a big bit of filler. This is my
that maybe Phil, I think you might be right, and I think in fact the fact that there's this kind of climactic moment that happens at that big match he's supposed to be doing later, mm-hmm. but it's in the locker room and there's like a double switch and all of that, mm-hmm. makes me wonder if maybe he really was going to perform at that event and there was going to be some tension because the hitmen are going to be there when he's wrestling at that event, and they just didn't shoot that, and instead they shot this thing because this. Again, it's a self-contained bit of nothing, and it's not interesting.
It could have been in any episode.
Exactly.
Really, it's so generic.
You really could have lifted this whole show
funny at all.
Like, I think both theories are right. I think this is a thing they just had on their shelf.
Yeah.
Hey, if we run short, here you go.
Just
if we can't, you know, use our guy who's a wrestler, okay, we're short. Do this.
Yeah.
And it was really short, so that's why it goes on and on and on.
Yeah. Yeah. So
there's like three returns to Miss Jones. Yeah. Though I do like when Magnum pulls out the handkerchief and just has that look of resignation while she grabs it.
She cries as her second.
That's nice. Doesn't redeem the scene.
anyway, Magnum also spent a long time in this scene because he says, 4 hours later, I came out with a name, Phil Lewis. And there's a parking ticket on the Ferrari. He says, Earl's son had taken the name of his stepfather. Like, Earl literally said that in this episode. So that's a real restatement for the people who were nodding off. Mm-hmm. Our theoretical 1985 viewer sitting in his underpants in the recliner has nodded off and missed that part. So restated here. Mm-hmm. So he tells the story to Rick. He's like, yeah, but how am I going to find him? And Rick is literally in a good bit of business, paging through the white pages, and she says, here he is. He's in the phone book. Also, Rick's jaw seems okay here, but it gets worse later. So, because he gets punched in the face. I thought that we would see more of it here, but it's not really here. So Magnum's talking in his voiceovers about like the warm feeling of doing a good deed. He goes to see the guy, Phil Lewis, who says, my father is dead. He's like, no, it's your stepfather. And he acts all weird and super paranoid and says, I don't know who hired you, but whoever hired you isn't legitimate. My dad died. Get out of here. And his like secretary is like, I ran his info. He's legit. Like, they're super paranoid about it, which is suspicious. Suspicious. Now, back at the estate, Higgins shows Ernest Borgnine to his room. Accordion music plays. Why? Does everybody remember that opening scene again? And he takes out of his case, because it would be dramatic to do so, he takes out of his case a gun. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, because, you know, if you have an accordion in Act One.
Yeah. It's Chekhov's accordion.
It's Chekhov's accordion gun, no less.
Yeah. No kidding.
Actual gun.
With accordion.
Which never goes off.
They're play wrestling with Rick and TC. Rick does have kind of a discolored face thing because of his first punch. Rick gets in a wrestling move with Ernest Borgnine and passes out complete with Tweety Bird sound effects. So this is, if you thought this episode was cartoony, oh boy.
It is actually confirmed. That move would be called an airplane spin. I don't know what they actually, whether they called it. Later on, TC says to Rick when Magnum wants to come and have a chat with Earl, TC says, "Let's practice our Tasmanian tiger dance."
Yeah.
And says it in the most alluring way that I was actually uncomfortable for a good 5 seconds.
Yeah.
And this leads to another segment.
Tasmanian tiger dance segment?
Well, in this, it's called Mixology PI.
Oh, okay.
Because in this scene, they bring up a move called the Detroit Death Grip.
Yes.
And since we're going to Detroit.
Indeed.
Phil, what would go in a Detroit Death Grip?
Motor oil. I don't know, actually. I'm not much of a... I'm more of a slug of bourbon is my cocktail of choice. So I would not know.
So, David, this is going to be a weird one because I don't do mixed drinks, but I'm going to do it anyway. Challenge accepted.
Yeah.
The Detroit Death Grip. I like Phil's suggestion of motor oil. It's going to start with a stout.
Uh-huh. That's kind of motor oil.
And then there's going to be, what would be a good harder alcohol to put in with it? It's like you're going to fortify that baby. So you're going to put some, what?
Well, you want something that matches well with the deep chocolate of a stout.
Right. So what is it?
That's a very good question.
Some really bad, you know, one of that bourbon they sell that they say tastes like chocolate. That's what goes in there.
Oh, God.
Oh, no.
It does not.
And then on top, a little bit of whipped cream. There you go. Boom.
I was going to say.
And some shaved nutmeg.
you could throw in some creme de menthe with the chocolate, and then you got the whipped cream, and it's like a dirty grasshopper.
Okay. Great. I'm so glad
we
did
this. Or you could do blue curacao because Detroit Tigers for blue.
Or if you did if you wanted to do Tigers colors, make it orange and blue. Orange and blue.
So blue curacao and maybe some, what's the triple sec?
Yeah.
All right.
There you go. And whipped cream.
Magnum speeds back
and
motor oil. Is troubled. Higgins just has to tell a story, but Magnum is troubled because he suspects now that something might not be quite right with...
That Earl is holding out information.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And he says, he says his father was killed in a traffic accident in Miami 27 years ago. I don't know who you are. And he gets very upset and very cagey, but he's also like, I can't tell you who I am or where I've been. It just don't matter. You got to believe me that I'm his pop. It just don't matter. He's like, you don't trust me, but you don't trust me either. And then... There's a really silly kind of like wrestle hold and a punch.
He basically puts him into a sleeper hold.
Yeah.
You're going to find my son.
And Rick and TC, who are theatrically practicing their Tasmanian tiger dance,
yes.
Look over like, huh? And come over and try to break it up. And then he says, you're fired.
At which
point,
says,
I quit.
TC is tossed by Ernest Borgnine into the bushes.
Yep.
And Ernest Borgnine punches Rick right in the jaw, knocking him cold. And then he storms off because I won't be insulted like this, asking who I am.
Yep. it's very silly.
It's really dumb.
It's, yeah.
Plus, at this point, Rick really needs medical attention.
Oh, yeah, he really does.
Which does not involve, here's some ice for your clearly broken jaw now.
So, Ernest Borgnine says goodbye to Higgins, who stops him, and they talk, and he's like, nobody gives a damn, nobody trusts anybody anymore, nobody knows what it is to be a friend, which I think he's laying it on real thick here, given that he refuses to give any information out about his thing, but it turns out there's reasons. He walks out the conveniently open gates of the estate where his son is sitting in a car and watches him go. And then
dun, dun, dun.
Rick wakes up and has a vision. He's like, oh, I know who he is. He's Earl Gianelli. He's a boxer from the 50s, but he's most known as the guy who knocked off Sal Marchese in the opening scene of this episode. Mm-hmm. They killed his manager.
And he actually says that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. He said, you guys saw the beginning of this episode, right? He killed his manager, or they killed his manager and put a permanent contract on him and said, the mob is permanently looking for him. And then as this happens, the men in suits appear at the airport.
And are picked up by the secretary.
Did he say the family? I think that was... the euphemism for a bit.
I'd like to introduce a segment called The Moment Phil Quit.
Yeah. Oh. And you lasted this long,
which,
did you?
Yes.
Which and Phil?
Well, both of us, really. But yeah, I don't know about these lifetime contracts thing.
Like, yeah.
At some point, the mob people who were most affected by that would have you know,
probably
died. Gone to jail.
Yeah, the fact that they're still
28 years.
They're still actively subverting secretaries of the kid of the guy who they might want to find 30 years later. Mm-hmm. But that's, look, this is a very broad story, and they're going to say, yes, forever the mob is going to look for this guy because he killed that guy in the 50s.
But I did like the use of Rick as an exposition dummy, which, I mean, I wrote this down as, this is a concussion exposition.
Yes.
Because at least that's funny instead of just, hey, guess what, Tom? I figured this out.
Yeah. No. It's fine. Rick does a lot of thinking as he... It's actually a pretty good Rick episode.
It really is.
It's only funny if in future episodes when they're really stumped on a case, they just beat the crap out of Rick.
Yeah.
And hopefully...
Yeah.
I'll beat some clues into you, and then no.
So these guys in the suits follow Magnum. He says there's a little voice that tells him, you know, this thing, and try one more thing. I could lose a couple of bozos. And then he basically does this thing where he checks in, and the secretary who picked the guys up at the airport, and he says, how much are they paying you, Cora? And then she leaves, and the guy is like, oh, aren't you going to go after her? He's like, I got it covered because Rick and TC are outside. Like, she was a plant. Your father is getting old. He's in his 50s. That's what we say here. It's like, first off, I'm offended. And second off, he is not in his 50s.
That's when David quit.
Yeah, he's 65, but he looks fantastic, everybody. He says, look, my mom told me before she died that my dad had, the mob was after him, that he killed a guy in Miami, and the mob is after him. And if he sees me, he'll die because they're always watching me. So that is why everything is shifty. And it's not because he isn't his dad. It's because they know the mob is watching, which they are because there are those guys in the suits right outside. Meanwhile,
seems like the mob would have better things to do, who am I to criticize?
And he says, you know, we were supposed to go to a ball game.
Yeah.
And I wrote down, I just paused it and went, it was a Detroit Tigers game, Thomas, because that'll really affect him.
Meanwhile, you know, a man with a folding chair tries to hit a lucha libre. Phil, how's the wrestling here?
This is actually probably okay wrestling, because I'm guessing B-roll that they shot at like a Hawaiian wrestling match.
Okay.
I'm going to guess.
All right. This is also fine. Where I thought they might have initially planned that Mr. White Death would make a comeback.
Yes. This is where I was. This is part of my earlier theory.
Yes, I think
that
you're right.
There would have been wrestling scenes here involving Ernest Borgnine or his stunt double.
While people are watching, and then maybe they're going to get him in the locker room or something, but Magnum is waiting, and instead that doesn't happen. Instead, the guys in the suits just go into this room where Magnum had gone in earlier. It's the locker room. Cora is there. And she's like, oh, he's back there, and it's TC in the Mr. White Death costume. Now, and then, let's just step through this. Then Rick appears, and they hit Rick, but then Magnum appears and has a gun, and these two guys have guns, but like it's like, haha, I'm behind you, I win, checkmate. Yes. And they're like, well, you got us. By the rules of fighting, you got us, or whatever.
By the rules of gunplay, we've been bested.
We've been bested. I'll also point out, TC is there. These guys have guns and are there to assassinate Mr. White Death. TC is dressed in the Mr. White Death costume. Why do they not just shoot TC to death
here? Because then he has to do the dramatic reveal to show that
who would agree to wear the costume of the guy and stand in front of the guys who are there to kill him?
I don't know. Yeah. These are the most honorable hitman ever.
I just wrote.
If you get the drop on them, they'll immediately
this
surrender.
This is ridiculous.
They only shoot people once they've had a visual confirmation
it's their
target.
Okay.
What if you end up shooting them and it's Moondog Spot just trying on the outfit?
Again.
Or it's Bill Mascaris, the man of a thousand masks.
Again.
Come on,
Phil. Your theory holds water because this is such a cockamamie climax. I think they must have slapped this together because they couldn't do what they had originally wanted to do with this.
It is incoherent.
Yeah.
That leads to,
we just cut that, like, it's over now. Cut to Magnum brings the son to the airport. Ernest Borgnine's been given a ticket by Higgins and he's waiting at the gate because we want to get these guys together, but we want him to have a plane to catch so they can't get together for any amount of time.
Right. He's like, and because the mob is so obsessed with killing this guy that they only sent two hitmen and not like a B team.
And they're not watching the airports. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry we missed that ball game, he says. He says, come with me, Phil. Come with me. We say that every time we try to do a podcast here.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
And he says, I can't, and you know that. Maybe someday we'll make that ball game, huh? Yeah.
And we will on August 16th, fellas.
We will. We will.
That's right.
The Detroit Death Grip. We'll be in the Detroit Death Grip on that day. So Magnum is watching this, and he nods. And he says, oh, the warm feeling is back. I've done a good deed. And he walks out to right outside the Honolulu airport where he's just got the car because, folks, it was the 80s. You could really casually just leave your car in front of the airport as well as just walk into the airport without a ticket and go to the gate and talk to your dad. Because
what I was thinking they were going to do is he was going to talk about the warm fuzzy feeling, go back to the car, and there'd be a parking ticket. But no, they didn't do it.
I wrote that down.
Yeah.
They didn't do it.
No.
That's the payoff.
So in this episode.
And the other thing I wrote down is, Ernest Borgnine goes rushing off to his plane. But, you know, he's got to take a quick break because it's a long flight. Goes into the men's room.
Oh, no.
And there are two more. That's where the B team is.
Yeah, we don't talk about that.
That's right. My headcanon.
They don't talk about it. Well, he was just going in there for the cocaine, but then they killed him.
That's right.
My friend Robert Loggia told me if I'm ever in Honolulu, go to the bathroom at the airport.
That's why he's called Mr. White Death.
It's like a Nancy Reagan warning. It's like, don't do drugs, kids, because Mr. White Death means cocaine in the men's room at the Honolulu airport, and you die. So this episode, which we've already established, is super troubled and lazy. cut back to the estate. Magnum says, hi, Punky, because he's gotten this nickname to lord over Higgins. And they do, I would say, the most perfunctory, have we not done this a million times before, banner of like, their hearts aren't even in it. There's like tennis courts for two weeks, hot tub for 3 weeks, widescreen TV for the weekend. And Higgins is like, oh, that's outrageous. Okay, fine. And Magnum's like, yay, I win. Then he goes to Rick and TC, who are there playing horseshoes. Rick is severely deformed at this point because he's been beaten up so much.
He is talking like this.
He brings them drinks. He says, hi, guys. And they say, don't hi guy us, which I did appreciate. And then they have a little conversation about how, you know, the mob's out for Ernest Borgnine. And although he survived 30 years, there's no way he's going to get there. One day they're going to get him. And Magnum says, yeah, maybe, but not today.
Yes, the one airplane that leaves Hawaii.
Last plane
every day
from Honolulu. Yeah, that's the 405 out of Honolulu Airport.
It's like the plane to America in Casablanca. That's the only flight.
And that ends Mr. White Death, an episode that is notable because Ernest Borgnine is kind of fun and for no other reason.
And again, you know, in my headcanon, if it were present day and you had cell phones and everything, and right as the plane's flying overhead and he goes, but not today, they would get these notifications about a shooting in the Honolulu Airport men's bathroom. And poor Earl.
Now, that's the end of the episode. But before we go, I have a segment of letters that I'd like to do with another letter. We had our early letters. This is a late letter from listener Jake. He says, hi, guys.
Hey, listener Jake.
Enjoying the new season so far. I recently moved and was packing up some stuff and came across my old copy of Larry Minetti's biography, Aloha Magnum. And I don't remember you guys ever mentioning it. Well, I didn't know it existed, so there's that. Larry writes about as well as he acts.
Oh, no.
I did know about it, and I have not read it yet.
But it's got some pretty good Magnum behind-the-scenes stuff, so check it out if you haven't already. Also, you guys recently covered No More Mr. Nice Guy. In the end, when Higgins spoils the score of the Army-Navy game, the game had just ended not 5 minutes earlier, so Higgins must have been watching it live, right? So he's apparently an avid fan of American college football. For some reason, that cracks me up. Now, Jake, I would say, no, what you're seeing is Higgins' commitment to griefing Magnum. That he came over there and watched the end of the game so he could spoil Magnum, not because he cares about the silly American college football.
Or he checked the news or saw a news bulletin.
Or it was such a big important, game it led all of the newscasts.
It's possible.
That's right.
It's possible. And with our final segment, I would like to tell you what we're watching next. Now, this is big, folks. This is really big. We're announcing that thanks to the Detroit, I've forgotten the name of it now, the Detroit Death Grip. Death Grip. We are going to be there August 16th, Magnum Day at Tiger Stadium. And then maybe afterward we'll go somewhere and drink things that are not the Detroit Death Grip, and you can come by and say hi if you're in the greater Detroit area, or find us at the ball game. Although, as Phil pointed out in his excellent newsletter, or maybe it was on Blue Sky, you pointed out that just look for the middle-aged men wearing Magnum PI gear will not help you because there will be hundreds of them. Mm-hmm. Anyway. Yeah.
But you know, I have a beard, so that might help me stand out.
It might.
I'm considering shaving my beard to make my mustache, which is normally not visible, make that stand out. So I don't know.
But here's another thing we're going to do while we're in Detroit. We're not in Detroit for that long, just a couple of days. Something we are going to do there is we're going to record together for the very first time our next episode, which will be about season 5, episode 6, Fragments. So you can go watch that. That'll be next week's episode as you listen to this, because I'm realizing now that as we record this, I think that game is like this weekend as this episode is released. Anyway, don't quote me on that.
It's
I don't know
okay.
how time works.
It's going to be live in the middle of the night in Hawaii. That's all that matters.
It is going to be live. So that's going to happen. That'll be our next episode, Fragments. We're going to record it live. It's going to be very exciting. And also, this is my note to everybody to say, that will be our final episode of this season of Magnum Podcast. We will be back. We will do a Christmas special at the very least. We are committed to doing all of these episodes now, so we'll be back sometime probably next year for another season of Magnum Podcast. But Fragments will be our last episode for this season, and we're going to do it live together in Detroit for the very first time. So that will be very exciting. Tune in for that next time. And that's it. Any other business before we go?
None for me, boss.
I will say I was amused by another letter that we have not shared, but a letter from a listener
out of time.
Who suggested an episode, and you immediately wrote back and said, you're going to love this week's episode, because that was the one that we released.
We literally had
a day later
an episode that was suggested the day that we released the episode. That was Limited Engagement. The day we released it, listener Savannah wrote in to say, you should do listener engagement. Thank you, listener Savannah. That is a wacky... I described that this week on Blue Sky by plot. And it is the more ridiculous, the more you synopsize that plot, because it's, you know, Magnum poses as a convenience store clerk while they have to hold a charity bingo auction or charity bingo event in order to save the weird old people who live at the retirement home that is being threatened by a mean landlord. I mean, it's every 80s movie. Anyway, thank you, listener Savannah, for writing in about that. She also said, P.S. Go, Ned, go. Go, yes. Ned. We love hearing from Ned. We heard from Ned. Ned's doing great. And running. Keep running, Ned. And
run all the way to Detroit, Ned. We'll see you there.
And a little backstory. Yeah. We have a hard out at the end of this recording today. Everybody knew that at the top of the hour, Phil needed to go. And I just want to applaud us for getting to the end 2 minutes before our deadline. And more than that, I want to point out, you can look back, you can listen back to notice all the times David tried to sabotage us. But we got there. In your face, David. We'll see you next week in Detroit. Goodbye.